This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian resistance fighters in Gaza fire a barrage of missiles at Tel Aviv and its suburbs in response to the Israeli genocide in the coastal territory. Iraq's Islamic resistance targets Israeli positions in Syria's occupied Golan Heights as well as the Umm Rashrash port in occupied Palestine in support of Gaza. And a senior Hezbollah official warns Israel that attacks on its military sites will only stop when the regime's onslaught on Gaza ends. Thank you for joining us. In today's top story, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has targeted Tel Aviv and its suburbs in response to Israel's deadly onslaught on Gaza. The Al-Qassam brigades launched a barrage of rockets, with Israeli sources reporting failed interception of the projectiles. The regime's ambulances were also reportedly dispatched to the damaged sites. The launch of the rockets came as Israeli airstrikes and shelling claim over 150 more lives across Gaza in the past 24 hours. The regime's latest attacks hit residential buildings in Khan Yunis. The southern city has also been witnessing fierce clashes between resistance fighters and Israeli forces over the past several days. A number of Palestinians were also killed in central Gaza, where Israeli warplanes struck several refugee camps. The genocidal war on the besieged strip is now in its 87th day. Nearly 3 months of Israeli fierce bombing has left many Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip displaced and without basic supplies. Our correspondent in Gaza has talked to some people as they explain their desperate situation. Let's take a listen.
The situation is indescribable. We are subjected to an unprecedented systematic starvation. Our children are dying because of hunger. We have no access to humanitarian supplies. We only hear about them. We don't have water to drink or even to go to the bathroom. And the water, if it was available, is undrinkable. We don't even have gas to make food. It's miserable.
Our conditions are so dire. We have no food, no water. We haven't received any supplies yet. We are 15 individuals living in this small tent, having no blankets, covers, or clothes. Our children are suffering as they need to eat. The only thing we get is some canned food. I don't know what we're supposed to do with two or three pieces of canned bean or meat.
The circumstances are so difficult and unprecedented. I have 13 children and we all live in this tiny tent, as you can see, which shouldn't even be used by a human being because it's like a small agricultural warehouse, but there are no choices and we have no options. Our situation is tragic, particularly when it comes to having access to food or water.
I fled my house in northern Gaza Strip to Al-Maghazi refugee camp in the central area, and after heavy bombings I was injured, as you can see. Then I was forced to leave and come to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here. I don't have a place to sleep. We barely find food to eat. I was compelled to exchange a meat can with a couple of loaves to eat. It's so difficult.
We're originally from Al-Sheti refugee camp in Gaza City. We are four families, my married daughters and me. We are 22 individuals living inside this narrow tent. It's tiny and overcrowded. Our situation is disastrous. We don't have food, we don't have water, and above all of that, we haven't received any real supplies. Our babies need diapers and we don't know how to get them.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas condemns an Israeli official's remark about the forced displacement of Palestinians from Gaza. Hamas described as a vile mockery and a war crime the comment made by the far-right Israeli finance minister. Bezalel Smotrich on Sunday called for the immigration of around 2 million Palestinians from the besieged Strip to other countries so that only 1 to 200,000 will remain there. He also said the Israeli settlers should come to Gaza after the end of the regime's onslaught. In response, Hamas vowed that people of Gaza will stand firm and steadfast against efforts to displace them from their own land. The Palestinian resistance movement also once again urged the international community to take effective measures to stop Israel's crimes. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it has carried out fresh attacks against Israeli positions in response to the regime's ongoing air and artillery strikes on Gaza. The resistance group said it targeted a military site in Syria's occupied Golan Heights. It has also attacked a target in the city of Omar Rashrash, also known as Eilat, in the southern part of the occupied Palestine. This is not the first time Iraq-based resistance groups hit Eilat. Since October the 7th, they have also carried out a number of drone and missile attacks on U.S. bases in the region. They believe Washington is complicit in Tel Aviv regime's onslaught on Gaza and its killing of tens of thousands of civilians. A senior official with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says attacks on Israeli positions across the southern Lebanese borders will end only if the regime ends its onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza. Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem says Israel's efforts to restore peace to the north of the occupied Palestinian territories will be in vain unless attacks on civilians in Gaza stop completely. The cleric warned that Israel's refusal to end the war in Gaza would lead to a further escalation in clashes with Hezbollah. The comments came after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the regime will do whatever it takes to restore calm to the northern occupied Palestine, where settlers have either been displaced or live in constant fear of missile attacks by Hezbollah. As just mentioned, the situation remains volatile along Lebanon's southern border, with the resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel continuing to exchange fire. Earlier, our correspondent had this update from southern Lebanon.
Well, today in the early hours of the morning, we woke up to the Israeli shelling in the towns of Kfar Kila and also in the area of Mahamas, which is right behind us on this side. Of course, the shelling did not stop. There were also a lot of airstrikes. And the village of Ramya, in addition to the drone attacks against the town of Labuni, which is near the Nakura area on the western side of the coast. Of course, the Israelis continued their attacks, in addition to the fact that you have drones and surveillance and reconnaissance planes hovering over our heads on an hourly basis, in addition to the fact that we always see the airstrike, the fighter jets also in Lebanese airspace. Now, of course, Hezbollah did also launch several operations yesterday, the most significant of which was a drone attack against the barracks of Ramta. Now, today, their operation was conducted in the area of Hanita, and that was right after we heard from Israeli media reports that the sirens sounded in the western side of the Galilee. Usually we get an insight basically on whether there were Israeli resistance operations. After we know that there are sirens that sounded, the sirens usually go off whenever there are any missiles that are launched from the Lebanese side. And this is one of the issues that we have seen in Israeli media continuously. It seems that they are always in a tense situation. There are sirens are always sounding sometimes. Even small issues, sometimes there's no missiles, but they still do hear those sirens. But today we know that those sirens meant that there was a Hezbollah operation. It was in the barracks of Hanita specifically.
Yemen's armed forces have vowed that the U.S. will pay the price for its deadly attack on Yemeni boats in the Red Sea. The spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces said U.S. movements in the Red Sea cannot prevent Yemen from carrying out its religious, moral, and humanitarian duty in support of Palestinians. Yahya Sari also called on other countries to avoid involvement in what he called the dangerous U.S. project, warning of negative repercussions. At least 10 Yemenis were killed in a U.S. attack on three Yemeni boats in the Red Sea. The U.S. says its helicopters shot at the vessels trying to attack Singapore-flagged vessel Hangzhou. Sari said the ship was heading to Israeli ports and was successfully targeted with appropriate naval missiles. Activist and political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti joined us earlier from Sana'a. He believes the United States has made the biggest mistake in targeting Yemeni vessels in the Red Sea. Let's take a listen.
And I'm sure that the United States, actually, they have done one of their biggest mistake, because who is in control of the sea is the one who are in control in the land, and this is the Yemeni army. And if we see that the United States has actually formed the so-called prosperity guardian, is actually the genocide guardian. Just imagine, Yemeni army have targeted many ships, as your correspondent in Sana'a have said, not a single casualty. They were really, really careful. They just want to stop those ships linked to Israel, to lift the blockade against Palestinian. And United States, actually, they want the opposite. They will put all their military in position. They will put all their interest in the region in danger, just to lift the blockade against Israel, because it has actually affected the Zionist state economy very, very bad, according to many international reports. And the United States now should actually expect that if this attack has taken place and they have killed some of Yemeni personnel, Yemeni Navy personnel, this means a clear declaration of war against Yemen. And United States actually should not expect that Yemen will let them attack our country or try to stop those attack against Israeli ship or launch an attack against Yemen from their bases in many countries like Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, or United Arab Emirates.
Iran's foreign minister has condemned the silence of some Western governments over Israel's crimes against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. In a phone call with his UK counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian slammed the double standards of some Western countries and also the US. He noted that Israel is permitted to slaughter Palestinians and set the whole world region on fire, while stopping an Israeli ship in the Red Sea is considered a threat to global economy. Amir Abdullahian also warned of a strong response to any Israeli threats against Iran. For his part, David Cameron called on Iran to try to prevent the expansion of the war in the region. The Iranian president has, in separate messages, congratulated the heads of Christian states and their citizens on the arrival of the Christian New Year. Ebrahim Raisi also wished all people around the world a year full of peace and health. In the meantime, the president noted that one of the most important crises gripping the human community today is the massacre of innocent Palestinians in Gaza by the Israeli regime. He expressed hope that international circles will, in cooperation with world leaders, take immediate action to stop the Israeli crimes, uproot tyranny and the desire for domination, and establish lasting peace and security across the globe. The Christian community in Pakistan has held special prayers for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza after they dedicated this year's Christmas celebrations to the oppressed people of Palestine. Nasser Kazmi has more in this report.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We desire peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy, and we feel compelled to express our concerns for our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, It is violence and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Meanwhile, people in Australia have staged rallies for the 11th weekend in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians. The largest demonstrations have taken place in Sydney and Melbourne, where thousands of people once again flooded the streets downtown, demanding Israel stop its genocide against the residents of Gaza. Here's more.
For the 11th weekend in a row since the start of Israel's most brutal war on Gaza, rallies were held in Sydney and Melbourne in support of Palestinians. In Sydney, thousands of people gathered once again in Central Business District's Hyde Park for a rally dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, called by the Palestine Action Group, an activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing Israel apartheid. A number of other groups also joined the rally, calling on Western governments to finally put some pressure on Israel for its ongoing violence, genocide and oppression against Palestinians.
I mean, the Australian government continues to be a firm backer of Israel, to their great shame. So clearly, again, 11 weeks of massive protests, the likes of which we've never seen before, is having an impact, and they're feeling the pressure, so they're shifting their rhetoric a bit.
The rally, attended by school union representatives, was also joined by a group of outraged Sydney-based Jews who hold anti-Zionist views.
So-called posture of the Western countries and so-called international law is, in my opinion, just pointless, and it's appalling. But quite frankly, we've got a genocide happening right in front of us.
Some of the speakers acknowledged that Palestinians are experiencing the same struggle as the indigenous people in Australia. Many hundreds of thousands of Aboriginals have been killed or forcibly removed from their land and their families at the hands of colonial authorities over the past 200 years.
People at the Sydney rally praised South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. More than 21,500 civilians have been killed by the Israeli army so far, including nearly 9,000 children and 6,500 women.
I mean, it is genocide. They should go to the International Criminal Court because they are committing war crimes. War crimes many, many times over. I mean, it's obvious, you know, this is the obvious to ordinary people that this is a massive ongoing war crime.
Also on Saturday, a rally in solidarity with the Gazans was held at Melbourne's State Library for the 11th week in a row. Max Civili, Sydney.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the U.S., a three-judge panel has affirmed that former President Donald Trump can be sued by U.S. Capitol Police officers seeking to hold Trump financially liable for the Washington riot that took place on 6th of January 2021. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A federal appeals court on Friday, 29th of December, allowed a lawsuit brought by a group of U.S. Capitol Police officers against former President Donald Trump to move forward, ruling that Trump is not entitled to absolute immunity from civil lawsuits. The lawsuit focuses on Trump's alleged conduct surrounding the 6th of January 2021 assault on the U.S. Capitol. The three-judge panel of U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit based its decision on a ruling in a separate case brought by two Capitol police officers and a group of House Democrats that was handed down earlier this month. In its 1st of December opinion, the D.C. Circuit rejected Donald Trump's claim that he's shielded from civil liability because his alleged actions in connection to the 6th of January attack on the Capitol fell within the official functions of the presidency. In its unsigned opinion on Friday, 29th of December, the panel of three judges said the case before them is indistinguishable from other disputes and said Trump's argument that he has immunity has failed. Whether President Trump's actions involve speech on matters of public concern bears no inherent connection to the essential distinction between official and unofficial acts, Chief Judge Sri Srinivasan and Judges Bradley Garcia and Judith Rogers wrote in their opinion, quoting the D.C. Circuit's earlier ruling. The case was brought in August of 2021 by seven Capitol police officers who defended the Capitol complex on 6th of January 2021 and were assaulted and harassed during the riot, which they said was the result of unlawful actions by former President Donald Trump and his allies. In addition to suing Trump, the police officers named more than a dozen others as defendants. Among them are members of the far-right extremist groups the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers, as well as Roger Stone, a longtime Trump ally. The Capitol police officers sought civil damages for the physical and emotional injuries they suffered as a result of the 6th of January 2021 attack. Trump asked the federal district court in Washington to dismiss the case, arguing he's absolutely immune from being sued for the alleged acts. But in January, U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta rejected his argument and allowed the case to proceed. Judge Mehta applied the same reasoning used in the case filed by the Democratic lawmakers and two police officers. There, he ruled in February of 2022 that Donald Trump is not entitled to broad immunity from civil lawsuits seeking to hold him accountable for the January 6 riot. Referencing Trump's speech outside the White House before the Capitol building was breached, Judge Mehta said the remarks were not part of the president's official duties. Instead, the judge said, Trump's words were an implicit call for imminent violence or lawlessness that is not protected by presidential immunity or the First Amendment. The D.C. Circuit agreed with the lower court's finding and rejected Donald Trump's argument that he was engaging in an official function of the presidency when he spoke outside of the White House on 6 of January 2021. When a first-term president opts to seek a second term, his campaign to win re-election is not an official presidential act, Judge Srinivasan, who was assigned both cases, wrote for the three-judge panel. The office of the presidency as an institution is agnostic about who will occupy it next, and campaigning to gain that office is not an official act of the office. Donald Trump can seek review of the adverse ruling in both cases to the full D.C. Circuit or to the U.S. Supreme Court. The former president has argued on several occasions that cases against him should be dismissed on the grounds of presidential immunity, though with little success. Most recently, the federal district judge presiding over his criminal case in Washington, D.C., ruled that Donald Trump cannot be shielded from federal prosecution for crimes allegedly committed whilst he was in the White House. His criminal case arose out of his alleged efforts to thwart the transfer of presidential power after the 2020 election. Trump has pleaded not guilty to the four charges that he faces. The website Yahoo News has also covered the same story and tells us more. A three-judge panel at the United States District Court for the District of Columbia has affirmed a lower court's ruling that former President Donald Trump can be sued by U.S. Capitol Police officers seeking to hold Trump financially liable for the Washington riot that took place on 6 of January 2021. The ruling is the latest loss for Donald Trump, whose lawyers continue to argue in court that presidential immunity shields him from criminal prosecution and civil lawsuits. On Friday, 29th of December, a federal appeals court affirmed the district court's ruling that Capitol Police officers can proceed with lawsuits seeking to hold Donald Trump liable for the 6th of January 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol building. In multiple cases, Trump's lawyers have argued that since Trump was still president on the day his supporters attempted to disrupt the certification of Joe Biden's 2020 election victory, all of his statements and actions should be viewed as part of his official duties and are therefore protected from criminal prosecution and civil lawsuits. The three-judge panel disagreed, siding with the lower court's ruling issued on 1st of December that presidential immunity claims did not protect Donald Trump from civil lawsuits seeking damages for his alleged role in the Capitol riot. When a first-term president opts to seek a second term in office, his campaign to win re-election is not an official presidential act, the lower appeals court wrote in its decision. Trump's lawyers are also seeking to have special counsel Jack Smith's election interference case dismissed on similar grounds. Last week, Zauer wrote in a brief to U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit that no president could face a criminal prosecution based on conduct for which he was acquitted by the US Senate, despite a majority vote to oust him from office. On social media, Donald Trump has said he was doing my duty as president by claiming the election was rigged against him. The D.C. Circuit will hear oral arguments in that case on 9th of January. This week, a federal appeals court ruled that presidential immunity does not protect Donald Trump from civil defamation suits filed by E. Jean Carroll, the second of which is scheduled to begin on 16th of January.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. And once again, we are here again. We have the opportunity to be at your service. I am Beta, and I am the host of today's episode of the program Viewpoint. And today with me, there are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Sheikh Rouhani. Welcome back to studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Thank you for...
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Given me the pleasure to be here with me. So, as you know, there are so many role models that we can take lessons from throughout the history. And one of these big personality is Sardar Soleimani or Hoj Qasim Soleimani, which we're going to talk about in this episode. And before going throughout his biography and martyrdom and so many other details, I'm going to actually narrate a beautiful a statement from Hoj Qasim Soleimani, which is really touching, in my opinion. And actually, in his speech, he stated the uprising of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him and his family, and the reason for the martyrdom of this innocent Imam, which I'm going to narrate it. Who is this Hussein that the whole world is crazy about him? Sacrifice is important, but more important than the sacrifice is what a person is sacrificed for. And the greatness of what he sacrificed for is more important than the sacrifice itself. And what all of the infallibles and imams and Prophet Muhammad and all the people throughout the history was martyred for was nothing more important than Islam itself. So with this introduction, we're going to go through our topic. And Brother Ali, let's start with you. Can you give a kind of brief biography throughout the glorious life of Qasim Soleimani, please?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. As for General Qasim Soleimani, to talk about his personality and different aspects and dimensions of his life and his personality, I think... it requires lots of sessions to sit and talk and explain what happened that made Haj Qasim out of him. I mean, what made him a colonel or General Soleimani that even after his martyrdom, it was stated by the leader of the Islamic Ummah that we should name the school of Haj Qasim, the school of thought of Haj Qasim. So what makes a person to... be able to form or create a school of thought for himself. It requires lots of features and characteristics to refer to and to discuss and to dive into all these characteristics. When we are talking about school, a school of thought, we do not necessarily mean that he was, for example, a philosopher or a jurist, that the school that we are talking about actually refers to those scientific outcomes or scientific inferences of that person, or in any field of or field or branches of knowledge or science. But when a person is able to create something exceptional in this world, so it means that he must have a series of characteristics that made him such a person. Lots of characteristics can be mentioned and named to talk about AI in this session, but we can refer to the spirituality of this person and his inclination towards spirituality and religious duties that he knew best. This is one factor. The next is his attitude towards his parents or respecting his parents, as we have Quranic evidences and Quranic recommendations that we are asked to respect our parents, and many other factors like what he did in the scene of politics, in the scene of his area of expertise, that is in army, in his behavior and treatment with people, the people in his vicinity, the people in his neighborhood, the people in his workplace. And all these factors should be read and studied well. So we need to discuss every of these and each of these characteristics in depth to see what makes a person to create a school of thought under the title of a school of Hajj Qasim Soleimani. Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Ali. So, Sheikh Rouhani, there is this beautiful name about Hajj Qasim, which we call him Sardari Dilha, or the leader of hearts. So, what does that mean, or where does it come from? What kind of features of this big personality came to this name?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When it comes to General Soleimani's features and characteristics, we can mention that Soleimani's military, institutional and managerial innovations have been an effective factor in creating unity in the Middle East, and also the establishment of dignity and position for the Shia authority as the guardian of Islamic religion, and also politics in Iraq and Lebanon was also identified as his most fundamental and institutional military innovation. So that's why serving or let's say protecting the Arab nations like Lebanon, like Syrian, like Iraqis against the, let's say, threats of terrorism like ISIS and Daesh, which was really a big threat against the Muslim nations, not only Iran, but also the Arab nations, Muslim nations. So to protecting these different nations against the great threat of ISIS and Daesh, who were decisive really to destroy each and everything and to murder and massacre the innocent civilians, particularly in Syria and Iraq, as we witnessed.
Yeah.
So the one who actually try, though, for example, Soleimani was an Iranian general, but he protected Lebanese, Syrians, Iraqis against Daesh, against ISIS, against terrorists. So that's why I think this kind of, let's say, generals in this nowadays world, in this modern world, they are of high, let's say, highest status and position in the hearts of the people who were protected by them against ISIS, particularly the innocent, let's say, children, innocent civilians, innocent men and women in Iraq. They were about to be massacred, to be, let's say, murdered by these groups, as we witnessed. So then, of course, to fighting against this kind of group is a kind of service to the whole world, because you save the whole humanity against this kind of terrorists and this kind of, let's say, extremist kind of groups who violate all the borders, all the red lines of the morality, of the religions, of the humanity. As we witnessed in Iraq and in Syria, they murdered numberless child or children, you know, even the babies, even the mothers and fathers, not only killing them, sometimes raping them, sometimes taking them as the servants, slavery, they revived the slavery in the modern world.
Yeah.
You know, so fighting against this kind of group is really honorable for anyone who can take part and who can protect the innocent civilians of the modern world, not only for Muslims, not only for Arabs, I think, but also for the whole world. They taught great lessons to the whole to the humanity. that, of course, yeah, against exactly. these kind of terrorist groups, we have to stand, we have to defend yeah. the innocent civilians against these kind of groups. That was really interesting and important to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, thank you, Sheikh Rouhani and Brother Ali, for just taking into consideration some of the characteristics of this great personality. And don't forget, dear listeners, that all of these that we are talking and discussing here are triggers for you to go and learn more and seek more knowledge about all these persons and role models. And another thing, as you remember, I actually mentioned a statement about martyrdom from Sardar Soleimani at the beginning of our episode. And Brother Ali, could you please talk more about his martyrdom and the intention and the goal of this martyrdom from his viewpoint?
Yeah, we said that he was actually fond of being martyred on the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala,
yeah.
and he reached this goal. But we might say that what is it that we are fond of, for example, the death and the life after this world? So a person should be mad that he loves something that all the people hate. All the other people hate it, but he likes it. So what is behind it? Look, for a believer, for a true believer, he does not think the martyrdom or death to be punishment. Rather than he is awaiting for such a time to come, because the final destination of a believer is to find and meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to be in presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So when he thinks that by martyrdom it will be
yeah.
facilitated and he will reach his wish and ambitions very soon, so why should he hesitate to reach to such a status? So martyrdom in the eyes of some is something very dreadful, very scary, very 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 difficult to expose with. But for a believer who is fond of his creator, for the one that he is working for, so it is very sweet. So out of those spiritualities that he gained in his prayers and in his nawafil, recommended prayers during his days and nights, so such a person can be created that he is fond of the one he was whispering all nights with. So he is fond of he's fond of reaching to that beloved one, to the one that he was devoting the whole life of his for.
Yeah.
So martyrdom in his eyes was very beautiful, and he had the experience of his friends who got martyred, and he saw them in different fronts, the 8-year imposed war by Iraq, and later on in the defendants of the holy shrines.
Exactly.
He felt that he will be more close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That was the reason that he was founded. So in the eyes of a believer, martyrdom is passing a bridge. This is that easy for him. And this bridge actually facilitates meeting and liqa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Then every true believer is fond of such a status.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Ali, and thank you, Sheikh Rouhani, for being with me in this episode to wrap all the things up. For sure, there is a lot to say about the personality of this great leadership of our time, and you know, I think 24 minutes is not enough to talk in detail about every feature of this great personality, but don't forget that everything we say here and everything is discussed here is only a trigger for you to go for and search for and learn more in order to get closer to the personality of these role models in both personal and social aspects of their lives. And we mentioned so many actually characteristics of this big personality, and I wish it was useful for you and you enjoyed this episode of Viewpoint. And thank you for listening to us, and it was all the time we have for today's episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you. shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha lana yawm al-qiyamati. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha shafa'atan ana laha.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
The number of UK companies going bust jumped by almost a fifth in October compared with a year earlier, as the toll of high interest rates and falling sales hit struggling businesses in Britain. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to one of UK's biggest insolvency practitioners, higher interest rates are pushing an increasing number of companies into insolvency. Begbie's trainer said it expected to see more businesses tip into insolvency in tandem with the indicators of corporate financial stress in the United Kingdom. The Bank of England has raised interest rates from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to 5.25% to try to tame inflation. That has significantly increased the cost of borrowing for British businesses, preventing many from papering over the cracks with cheap debt. Interest rate increases also have the effect of reducing spending in the economy, giving indebted companies little way out. Rick Trainer, the executive chair of Begbie's Trainer, said the company had seen an increase in insolvency numbers reflecting the current interest rate and inflation environment. The company's revenues from insolvencies rose by 17%, and it said that corporate distress levels continue to increase. Economists expect Britain's recent weak economic performance to continue into 2024. Forecasts from professional economists compiled by the Treasury suggest Britain's gross domestic product will grow by only 0.5% in 2024, the same rate as in 2023. Although suggesting the United Kingdom will avoid a recession, the level of economic growth would remain far short of the 2% annual average before the financial crisis of 2008. According to data from the Insolvency Service, the number of corporate insolvencies in the year to September 30th increased by 17% to 24,326. Begbie's trainer said that increase had largely been from liquidations, which tend to be requested by smaller companies, but added that administrations were also approaching pre-pandemic levels after a period in which companies were given more leeway on some debts. Administrators tend to be called in to larger, more complex businesses. Insolvency practitioners have a real-time insight into the pressures facing businesses, although they, by contrast, tend to benefit from an increase in work when times are tough for the wider economy. Begbie's trainer said it had increased staff numbers by 12% over the past year to cope with the expected influx of new business. The company reported a resilient performance in its financial advisory business, as more companies sought to refinance or restructure their businesses. That made up for a decline in revenues from investments or mergers and acquisitions, with fewer businesses feeling able to spend. Website Reddit has also covered the same story. The number of UK companies going bust jumped by almost a fifth in October compared with a year earlier, as the toll of high interest rates and falling sales hit struggling businesses in Britain. The Insolvency Service said 2,308 firms in England and Wales collapsed in October, which was 19% more than in October of 2022, and higher than pre-pandemic levels. Construction companies, retailers and manufacturing firms headed the list of sectors most affected by firms becoming insolvent. The retailer Wilko, which went into administration on 10th of October and has subsequently collapsed with a loss of 12,500 jobs and 400 stores, is expected to signal further company insolvencies in the remainder of the year. The industry body, R3, said corporate insolvencies increased by 71% from October of 2021's total of 1,347 and by 69% compared with pre-pandemic levels in October of 2019. The Insolvency Service said one of the biggest drivers was action by the tax authority HMRC, which has increased the number of winding up orders for unpaid tax in recent months. A breakdown of the figures showed the increase was mostly due to a rise in creditors' voluntary liquidations, in which a company is voluntarily wound up either by its directors or its shareholders. There were 1,880 creditors' voluntary liquidations last month, 13% higher than in October of 2022. The number of administrations which allow an insolvency practitioner to take over the running of a firm, usually to find a potential buyer, was also higher than in October of 2022. The HMRC and other creditors secured winding up orders for 221 compulsory liquidations in October, 45% higher than in October of last year. Insolvency practitioners said Britain had avoided the avalanche of companies going bust predicted in the months after the COVID-19 pandemic first hit in 2020, but was now seeing the effects of tighter and more costly lending on the finances of firms left vulnerable by the cost of living crisis. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a think tank, about 7,000 businesses are likely to fail every quarter in 2024 as high interest rates cause financial strain and Britain's economy enters recession. The Centre for Economics and Business Research said debt taken on during the pandemic, higher borrowing costs and the cost of living crisis would drive an increasing number of businesses under, particularly in the retail and hospitality sectors. There were more than 6,700 business insolvencies in Britain in the second quarter of 2023, more than double in a typical quarter during the pandemic, when many businesses were largely protected from insolvency through a range of support measures. CEBR said insolvencies over the period were 50% higher than the same quarter pre-pandemic in 2019, and they averaged 4,100 on a quarterly basis between 2015 and 2019. The Bank of England has raised interest rates 14 times since the end of 2021, from 0.1% at the end of 2021 to the current 5.25%, heaping pressure on indebted households and businesses. The CEBR is forecasting two more rate increases in the current cycle, with bank rate peaking at 5.75%. The think tank said the worst is yet to come in terms of borrowing costs, quite apart from the impact of fixed-term loans made when interest rates were lower being rolled over at the new higher rates. It added, looking ahead to the future, the CEBR expects the rate of business insolvencies to remain high as interest rates continue to rise, pushing up debt repayments to unsustainable levels for some businesses. Our models suggest that there could be 7,000 insolvencies per quarter on average across 2024. Furthermore, CEBR is forecasting a recession in Britain with two consecutive quarters of contraction in gross domestic product in the fourth quarter of 2023 and the first quarter of 2024.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.